You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the Thrive podcast series hosted by Med Learning Group. My name is Dave Chapman, and I will be the host of today's podcast. In this episode, we will review how to assess the severity of a patient's atopic dermatitis, its impact on their daily activities, and how to coordinate care when needed with other specialists. Joining me today is Dr. Jonathan Silverberg, Director of Clinical Research and Patch Testing at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Dr. Silverberg.
Thank you for having me.
Great. Looking forward to our discussion and want to go through a few questions that I think will be of interest to our audience. First, I want to go to one of your quotes. You were noted in saying, quote, "The full impact of atopic dermatitis cannot be estimated based on signs of skin alone." So how do you assess the burden of atopic dermatitis on your patients during a typical visit?
Sure. So I think there's a few important aspects to think about, a few important considerations. One is, even within the realm of skin signs, we have to recognize that atopic dermatitis is a very variable disease. Patients can, you know, be erythrodermic 1 week and then 2 months later be clear by the time they get in to see us in a visit. So it's important not just to judge the severity based on what you're seeing in front of you at that moment in time, but to also think about and try to assess, you know, how does the disease behave between visits? A lot of times patients, will tell me they have severe disease and I look at their skin and they look pretty mild. And they say, well, yeah, because today's a good day. I was in the hospital 2 weeks ago getting prednisone and oral antibiotics. And then I realize, oh, that's why they look good today. But now I realize they have more severe disease that needs to be addressed longer term. The second issue, I think it's really important, and equally, perhaps even more important, is to assess the symptom burden of the disease. We know itch is the universal symptom in atopic dermatitis, is also the most burdensome. But there's many aspects: skin pain, sleep disturbance, mental health impacts. Understand that there is a tremendous burden of symptoms in atopic dermatitis that you might not be able to appreciate by looking at the skin alone. And that's where you really need to ask. And, you know, there's all kinds of validated tools and questionnaires that you could use, but simple questions just to rate the severity of their itch. Understand how it's impacting their sleep, how it's impacting their quality of life. And you'll find probably about 40% of the time that you will pick up a tremendous burden of the disease that you would have missed by looking at the skin alone.
Great. Thank you. That's very helpful. Next, in your patients who have comorbidities, such as allergic rhinitis or asthma, I'm curious, how is that individual's care coordinated by you across multiple specialists?
A coordination of care across multiple specialties is not always an easy thing to do. I've been fortunate to have led a multidisciplinary eczema clinic where I had the allergists, immunologists on site. And ideally, I think that's the best model to have, but it's not always feasible outside of an academic setting. And it's not always a financially rewarding approach, even if it does provide the best quality of care. So in the typical model where, you know, we have different providers in different settings, I think it's really important to have coordination at the very least where, I'm able to see the notes of my allergy immunology colleagues. Sometimes the electronic health records will facilitate that. Sometimes we have to have the patient facilitate, sending over, whether it's faxes or digital copies. So I want to know what other testing was done, what the impression of the other providers are. But I think it's important to also have additional follow-up and more direct conversation. Nowadays, I think in the old days, it was you would call the provider and, you'd leave the voicemail, wait for them to get back to you. But now we've got so many new ways to communicate. There are HIPAA secure texting apps. There's the ability to email with secure HIPAA, emails. And then even just sending communications through the EHRs to other providers within your network. that you don't have to sit for 3 hours waiting on hold, and you can send that message and get the response whenever they get to it. And it doesn't really add more burden, but it's absolutely essential. When patients don't have coordination of care, they get mixed messages. The allergist tells them, gives them another topical therapy or something else. Now they're totally confused. We really do want to reduce that burden and confusion for patients.
Sure, that makes complete sense. And as you said, in an academic setting, that makes sense that that would work. In the community, probably a bit more challenging. In your position as a dermatologist, is it unusual for you to be patch testing, or is that pretty much typical in an academic setting such as yours?
So, you know, I'm a patch tester, right? And so I have the bias of when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? But that said, I always tell patients the cliche, you know, they say about surgeons, you know, good surgeon knows how to cut, the best surgeons know when not to. And it's the same thing with patch testing. The best patch testers know when not to patch test because the likelihood of a reaction is going to be so low. But it comes up a lot more than we would think, or is relevant a lot more than we would think based on how many patch testers there are in the country. There's a real shortage of folks in dermatology or even allergy immunology who are willing to do expanded patch testing. There's many reasons why that is. There's a lot of challenges with practice dynamics and management issues. So you've got about maybe 150, 200 folks who like really do a decent amount of patch testing for roughly 400 million people. It's not a great ratio, you know, for access. And so I would argue that we should follow those consensus guidelines that I mentioned quite literally. But if we did, that would amount to millions of patients just within the atopic dermatitis realm who would need patch testing. There isn't enough access out there. So it's a very important consideration. We really need to keep it in our differential diagnosis and in the back of our minds for all of our more challenging atopic dermatitis patients. But I fully acknowledge that for many dermatologists in many regions, there's no one to refer them to. And there is no expanded patch testing available. And sometimes you just have to make empiric choices around avoidance and do the best you can to navigate those, you know, practice gaps.
You had mentioned this earlier, but I wanted to get your opinions on, there are a number of clinical assessment tools. There's SCORAD, EASI, there are some for parents. And is there one that you prefer or that you've used that seems to be the most helpful? And then how frequently do you use it? And how do those findings sort of help guide your management in that particular situation?
Yeah, so great question. I'll preface by saying I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer to this. And any choices that need to be made need to sort of balance two broad principles. One, you want to have a tool that is valid, and actually you could trust what it's telling you. And two is you want something that's actually feasible for your practice setting. And of course, no two practices are exactly alike. So the choices there are going to vary. It's even going to vary by region in terms of which tools certain payers might want, certain regulators might want. And just based on historical purposes about where some of these tools were developed, they're sometimes favorites. So what do I mean by that? Well, first, I would say at the very least, you want to measure one, you know, structured lesional severity assessment, and you'd want to capture at least one patient-reported outcome. Because as I mentioned beforehand, there's a symptom burden that you're just not going to be able to see a whole lot of the time. In terms of what your choice for a lesional severity assessment would look like, you've got options. There's things like the SCORAD. In Europe, my colleagues in Europe are going to prefer the SCORAD much of the time because it was developed with, you know, stakeholder feedback from Germany and France and, you know, Western European feedback. For many parts of the world, the EASI score, the Eczema Area and Severity Index, is preferred because payers insist upon it being collected in order to get access to newer medications. Despite its acronym, there's nothing easy about, you know, assessing it. But it's something that if you're comfortable with it, you can use in practice. My, you know, from just conversations with colleagues throughout the US, I think most are comfortable just doing an investigator's global assessment score. So just looking at the lesions, take a representative lesion. How red, raised, nasty does it look? Is it mild, moderate, severe? And a good body surface area, because body surface area is really important. For a patient-reported outcome, there are so many amazing tools out there. If you really feel like you're pressed on time and you don't have the resources to build these into your practice, just assess the severity of itch on a scale of 0 to 10. You'll get such rich information with that alone. It can be done when rooming the patient like a vital sign. It doesn't slow you down in practice in any way. There are some amazing other tools. There's one called the atopic dermatitis control tool that assesses in just a few questions, some really important individual content around how severe the disease is to the patient, how much it bothers them, how it's impacting sleep and mood and things like that. And it'll give you a sense of the overall control. And you know, when you need to sort of step up your game, when the current treatment approach is just not doing the trick. How frequently? I don't think you need to go crazy. You could have it done at each visit. If you want to monitor between visits, there's some cool new technology to be able to do that, but you don't have to get fancy. Just have them do it when they come into the office in the waiting area before you even come in. It won't slow you down and it'll give you really rich information.
We have a minute or two left. I don't know, do you have any other additional pointers or information that you want to impart to our audience before we finish?
Sure. I feel like we don't have enough time to get it all in. But look, I think this is really the golden era of atopic dermatitis, and there's so much changing. I think, you know, as we have new therapies are available, each offers its own sort of value proposition and has certain, you know, strengths and weaknesses. And it's really important to not just try a one-size-fits-all approach. So collecting these different tools, doing a more holistic assessment of the patient, understanding the longitudinal course of the disease, the symptom burden, et cetera, all of that will feed in beautifully to matching up the right medication for the right patient. And I think that's really what we always aspire to. And I think we're finally in the era where it's relevant and we have the opportunity to do it. We should do it well.
Great. Thank you. I want to thank you, Dr. Silverberg, for letting us pick your brain. And also want to thank our audience for participating in this Thrive broadcast. And we hope that you will listen to other episodes of the Thrive Atopic Dermatitis podcast series. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians, nurses, and other healthcare practitioners. I would like to also give a special thank you to our grant supporters, Sanofi and Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, who provided an unrestricted educational grant for this activity.